You're listening to Economics of Place, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League. Here's your host, Dan Gilmartin.
Welcome back to the Economics of Place podcast. I'm Dan Gilmartin, and I'm joined now by Melanie Piana.
Hi, Dan.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Melanie is on the Ferndale City Council right in Oakland County, Michigan. She also works at Jefferson East, which is a nonprofit development corporation on the east side of the city of Detroit. And she's also engaged in probably too many things to mention. So I thought you'd be a great guest to have on today to talk about some things going on in and around Ferndale.
I love talking about Ferndale. Every elected official loves talking about their community. So
right.
I'm happy to be here.
So you're not a native Ferndalian? Ferndaler? What do we
Ferndalian.
Call it? Ferndalian. Okay. You're not a native Ferndalian. You moved there. And so that's a choice on where you're going to go. Why did you go there?
Well, I grew up in Genoa Township, which is situated between Howell and Brighton. And I went to Albion College. And when I graduated, a lot of the jobs were situated along the Woodward Corridor. And I went into the advertising industry, and my first job was located at Woodward and Long Lake. And so that was began my journey of exploring all the communities along Woodward and started to explore Detroit, because I grew up not coming down to the city because it was too far.
Right.
Didn't know how to drive.
Probably told not to come down, too,
I
by
was
so many
also
different
told
people.
Not to come down, right. Unfortunately.
So what attracts you about, so that's what, 14 years ago we decided?
14 years ago I moved into Ferndale, but I lived in Pontiac, I lived in Royal Oak, and then I lived in East Dearborn in the heart of the Muslim community at Warren and Schaefer. So okay. I really did explore neighborhoods until I settled in Ferndale.
Right, and Ferndale itself is pretty diverse background of the communities you just mentioned. Ferndale itself enjoys sort of a special place on the diversity factor, thermometer, whatever we call it, for its openness, its traditional openness, which they've had in the city, and something that still continues today.
That's one of the attributes I think people are really attracted to Ferndale. We are an open and welcoming community, and really the gay rights activism started in the 80s. Through residents who thought they were not being protected by our police department. And there was acts of discrimination by some people in our community. And so they started organizing and working with our police department. And so over a 30-year period, cultivated a community that was supportive of people thinking and being different. And right now I say Ferndale is a place where you can be who you are. And we really like people's creativity, and being different is part of who our community is, and having acceptance for that.
Yeah. And it also leads you guys, I think, to reach out. The community has always done that in my experience, but certainly you maybe more than anyone sort of see yourself as a regional ambassador with a lot of the work that you've done both professionally and also as an elected official in Ferndale. What do you see as far as sort of the regional conversation in Southeast Michigan specifically? We could go the whole state and talk about that, but around here it's a bit of a different. You cross over lines. You work in the city of Detroit. You have a council. You're a council member in a suburban community, an inner ring suburb, but then you're from a exurb, I guess we might call it. So you're kind of all over the map. What do you see? How do you think it's different today than it was maybe 20 years ago? Better? Worse? The same?
I think we're in a better position. And many communities, I think, through the last 15 years, prior to being elected, my professional path led me to run for office. And I worked at a startup nonprofit called the Michigan Suburbs Alliance and renamed to Metro Matters. And the premise of this nonprofit was started by mayors and city managers who wanted to bridge the inner ring divide between the city of Detroit and the inner ring suburbs. Many of the challenges were being faced by the inner ring suburbs as Detroit on a different scale, but nonetheless, disinvestment in these communities, in the existing communities. And that really led me to be part of, new conversations about what is the role of a local government, not only to its residents, but to its neighbors and in a broader context in the region. And you cannot, you know, run a local government in a vacuum.
No.
Because what happens in your community impacts all the communities around you and the city of Detroit.
Sure.
And vice versa. And so I'm really grateful that our city council members tend to view Ferndale's position in the region in the same way. We completed our first ever strategic plan a year and a half ago, and in there we set regional goals that we create strong regional
partners. In your city plan, you had regional goals.
We, in our strategic plan, we set strong regional partnerships as a goal, as a guiding goal for city council and the community. And now we are trying to explore ways. What does that really look like?
It's very American. It's very, you know, Ferndale destiny. You know?
Well, I think, well, yeah, it's our destiny, but our destiny is part of the region.
Right.
And one way that we've always expressed, you know, fulfilling that role is connecting to our neighbors. And we've done that through infrastructure investment,
right,
which doesn't sound very sexy, but it really comes down to better sidewalks, bike lanes,
roads, bike lanes,
and all that. And so we've done that through connecting to Pleasant Ridge, Hazel Park. And now we're focusing on the city of Detroit on Livernois Avenue, connecting over 8 Mile,
right,
and really being intentional in that partnership and with Detroit city staff and making sure that the infrastructure on their side really connects and matches on our side, because yeah, we're not only connecting the communities, we're connecting neighborhoods.
Right, absolutely. I mean, for years, 8 Mile was both a real border as well as a, and it still is in many ways, as well as a sort of a seemingly seeming difference that people put a lot of weight into, I would say. That, it strikes me when you talk about Livernois, there's some really cool things happening along Livernois, 7 Mile area, the University mm-hmm. District, and when you talk about communities like Ferndale, you know, that's a 10-minute walk for your residents,
mm-hmm.
or a quick bike ride, or a quick
Absolutely.
Jump in the car, and they need to be able to take advantage of that, and vice versa, the residents of the neighborhood in Detroit need to be able to come out and shop in your stores and enjoy your parks and things. So that's one thing that I think is working to lessen that 8 Mile divide that has been so prevalent in Detroit probably for, what, 50, 60 years or something like that?
Right. And, you know, one of my goals...
And that's on purpose, you're saying.
Right. Yeah. Right. One of my goals on council, and other council members share this, is breaking down those perceptions and showing that, that, you know, 8 Mile is 8 lanes of road,
right,
and relatively is this physical barrier. But it also is this mental barrier between us versus them, Detroit
right.
versus suburb.
City-suburb.
And since I lived near 8 Mile in Livernois for 12 out of the 14 years I've been in Ferndale, you know, I used to jog 8 Mile. I'm not a jogger. In fact, I really hate running, but I still do it. Then I would post my jogs on Twitter and Facebook because I wanted to show that it was safe on 8 Mile
sure.
Between the communities. And to me, that was really important of showing everyday life, because Ferndalians walk it. There's a park on Ferndale's side right on 8 Mile, and Detroit residents come over and enjoy our park as well. It's the closest one to them. And so when you think of space and planning for that, you know, and being welcoming, how do you connect neighborhoods so that everybody prospers and everybody feels part of you know, a broader community than just being in a Detroit neighborhood or a Ferndale neighborhood.
Are there other communities doing what you guys are doing? Maybe not to the extent, but if you look around and you see other communities that have made similar type value-based propositions about being inclusive, about sharing with their neighbor communities, looking at things regionally, who comes to mind?
Well, I would say that a lot of our neighboring communities are partnering. The city of Oak Park is connecting to the west side of our community. We completed a major street infrastructure project improvement a couple years ago, and now we wrote a joint grant,
right,
and a primary of the infrastructure improvement is on Oak Park side, and they're putting in a walking path, beautiful Which
for people who have never written a joint grant on behalf of two cities is a real uphill battle. So the grant in and of itself is probably a 5-year thing to get into.
Well,
so the fact you're succeeding with that is amazing.
Well, I don't see it as uphill battle. I see it as a win.
Right.
Because a lot of these places, these government agencies that are giving out money want to reward this type of governmental interaction and collaboration. Mm-hmm. And so for us, I think that's where we always start with our staff. Who does this impact? This is a border, you know, neighborhood or border streets.
Sure.
This is going to impact the people on the other side of the community. But it's still, a knitted neighborhood with an invisible municipal border.
Exactly. A physical border that doesn't really exist.
Right.
Thank God.
But your taxes stop there.
Right.
Right?
Right. Right. For sure. So when you think about working together, and we always hear this, and the ultimate sort of working together is consolidating. And I think a lot of people in the business community or people sometimes that are outside of government looking at it, do you go all the way there in your head in terms of consolidating some of these communities, or is it just more of a strategy to get them to work together? Or have you gone that far?
Well, you know, this has been part of conversation for 15 years. I started getting exposed to it at the Michigan Suburbs Alliance. And I would say that consolidating governments, the tools that have been put in place to, you know, see if that is possible, think are limited. They're short, they're time boxed by
They're
time boxed by legislative changes, legislator changes themselves from term limits. And so it's very hard for, I think, governments to take a look long term. Now, this is not to say that, you know, Ferndale has been part of looking at how do we share services, how do we, reduce the costs. Ferndale we provide fire service for Pleasant Ridge and Royal Oak Township. We work in an Oakway network through our police department for this Oakland County. So every community can show examples. I would say the barrier to city consolidation, if that is the goal of the communities, is cultural, and that the state has set up financial tools, but not the cultural tools. And, you know,
what do you mean by that?
For example, I always use this, is that the city of Ferndale would never consolidate services, probably, most likely, this is my opinion, with a community that did not support diversity or LGBT community. That is a cultural difference that no matter if you save taxpayer money on, you know, a DPW truck.
It's a community value that they're not willing to give up to cut a tax or do something different, right?
So for communities across the state of Michigan, whether it's a village, township exploring, or two entering suburbs exploring as well, the cultural component of what would make a community come together needs to be part of that conversation. And right now, I would say it's missing.
Right.
You know, Ferndale is not talking about that at all, but this is me pondering.
Yeah.
This question that I hear from elected officials, from state officials who are interested in cities consolidating. And I always go back to a poor community plus a poor community from a government revenue standpoint doesn't really make a rich community. You still need to pay for essential services. And if your tax revenue is your millage, the amount your millage rate will raise is low, and then you're being rolled back, you are in a disadvantage anyway. And so the disinvestment system is in place. So when I go back to the tools seem to be misaligned with the current situation that cities are in.
Yeah, I think with most bureaucracies, whether that be government or business or academia or K-12, wherever it is, they run sort of behind the curve, right? They don't change until 5-10 years after they should have changed, if you're lucky. Sometimes it's even longer than that. And I do know that the way communities are governed today, and what leaders like yourself are looking for, often the tools that we have are things that leaders needed in 1980 or 1990 or 2000.
Correct.
And not necessarily something you need today based on what people want, because people want something a little bit different from their local governments today than they wanted before. Certain things they can do on their own, and other things they need help from the community on.
Yeah.
So if I could ask you to think 5 years out and look at, as we sit here at the new Pal Stadium, the corner of the former Tiger Stadium, which is an amazing place that kind of gives you chills. We're sitting right next to the dugout here doing this.
I know. Eric Larson, who is the, the developer of this project, really sort of had a vision for this corner.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And when it's very cool right now, but when it's completely done, it's going to be unbelievable. You know, if you could look at this, takes time, right?
Right.
So if you look 5-10 years out, if we've succeeded in doing better regionally, if we succeeded as a city, as a region, as a state in doing better in terms of welcoming people and being open for everybody, what's happened? If we're sitting here doing this going, wow, we had a great 10 years, what are a couple things that happened, do you think?
Oh, wow, that's a big question. I really think new models of regionalism need to be explored. I somewhat feel like we're stuck in this paradigm of giving examples of that worked in the past, but may not be the right examples going into the future.
Yeah.
And we always cite Cobo Hall and the Detroit Zoo. And while those are amazing efforts to create sustainable revenue for assets that benefit the region, at the end of the day, you know, our region has a huge housing problem, and each city now is tackling it on their own,
right,
individually. Does that make sense? I don't think so, but if, you know, as elected leader, I still need to address these problems locally. But is that system of thinking about how do we provide housing for everyone in our region, particularly suburbs are, you know, poverty levels are increasing and housing is even getting harder to find in the suburbs. So I look at issues like that. Where's the disruptive, you know, model that's going to come in and who is responsible for helping do that? I don't know. So the 5-year projection is, I don't know, but we definitely need to be doing something different. And I'm eager to be part of doing that something different because Ferndale cannot do it on its own. Yeah. The leaders cannot do it on its own. We need partners and we need the business community, the philanthropic community, and government to help figure it out.
I agree. So with that, we're going to end the podcast. I'm going to thank Melanie for being here.
Those were some deep issues.
Oh, deep issues. Well, that's what we like to do. We like to do deep issues. So, if you could be any animal in the forest, what would you be?
Any animal in
that's
the forest.
That's the deepest one I got.
I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll think about that. Maybe we'll do that in the next time. So thanks for being with us here on the Economics of Place podcast, and hopefully you will come back and listen to another guest as we have somebody coming in the very near future. So long from the corner, former Tiger Stadium in Detroit.
Thanks, Dan.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.